We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Phenomenal text says, I remember when U.S.-China relations were based on Nate Shearholtz's home plate collisions in the Olympics. Oh, the good old days. You're right about that.
I will say, on the sports and politics colliding front, I am... Especially if we're going to have people saying, oh, how dare Steve Kerr not comment and how dare the NBA bow down to China and, oh, it's all about the money and all this. The NBA is a business, fundamentally. And as long as the avenues of business are open with China, I don't know that, I mean, every single person who has texted in F China or Steve Kerr's a fraud, how dare he, or the NBA is all about money, they don't care about morals or human rights. Like, you are today using a product or consuming a beverage or something that involves something made in China. Like, that is just happening in your life. The NFL is completely entangled with the U.S. government and military. So, anytime you turn on the NFL, you are effectively supporting certain bodies of the government and the U.S. military in an active way. And I guarantee you a huge percentage of NFL fans don't feel like they're making the decision to show any sort of political support when they turn on the game on Sunday. I get it. We'd like all of the people we hold up as smart and thoughtful to be smart and thoughtful about everything all of the time. But starting to criticize people for everything that might affect a political connection, like, it's just a very slippery slope. It's extremely, and
you can't make everyone happy all the time. And if it doesn't land perfectly, as someone, oh, now I'm offended. No, I'm offended by that. No, well, let me tell you what offends me about how you're offended about what you were originally offended about when you got offended in the first place. Welcome to 2019.
But I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily on point. But the difference here is that the NBA has cast itself as the progressive league, the one that believes in progressive causes, and now the one time that a progressive statement, if you want to glorify what a tweet actually is and make it a statement, is troublesome because it will cost money. It means that, well, you're not progressive. You're progressive when it's convenient.
Well,
and then they have to basically live with that. Because every choice you make is a choice you're making for down the road, too. Well, and I don't think they saw this coming, and now they're stuck.
And this is what happens when you start looking to sports to, you know, direct your own personal morality play. This is about making money, and that's just about what it really is. That's it. It's making money, and it's not here to raise your children better or teach you about police brutality or human rights or anything like that. That's not what sports wanted to do. It's what they were asked to do. It's what they acquiesced doing, and they're bad at it. Because when the end of the day is sell the ticket for as much as possible, get as many people to watch as possible, that's the goal. Nothing else. We got to move back to the NFL and what the 49ers did yesterday. You know, the only way to knock holes in their 4-0 start is to just start criticizing their opponents. That's it. What the Niners have done is pretty much beyond criticism, other than like the guy who's like, well, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to make the play when he's asked to make the big play one day. Well, you're probably not going to have to be asked to make the big play one day if you're rushing for 200 yards per game every single time you look up and are leading a lot of games. What do we say the magic number was for Kyle Shanahan? A lead going into the third quarter? What did I say it was yesterday? I had it yesterday. It was like 9-3 with a lead going into the third quarter. 12-3 with a lead going into the third quarter. You don't need a fourth quarter spectacular quarterback under those circumstances. The 49ers have built a team that is eerily similar to the credibility that Jim Harbaugh established quickly. I mean, it really is. It's almost the exact same blueprint. Run the ball, tackle everything, frustrate the other quarterback. That's where we are. It's a good place to be for a team that was 4-12 last year.
It's also oddly reminiscent of the 81 team that went from 6-10 to 13-3, because that team, as much as people wanted to talk about Joe Montana, was defense first, and they ran the ball more than they threw it. It's the easiest and swiftest way to go from sub-mediocre to good, and on a rare occasion, you can become really good if you can keep the other team from A, having the ball, and B, scoring when they have it. That's always been true in football, and it doesn't surprise me that Kyle Shanahan, whose father has been in the business for 50-plus years, would have, you know, given that bit of wisdom to his son, because as we've said before, his instinct would have been, I got to make the offense better. And the fact is, he went against his own self-interest, made the defense better, because he was looking at this as a macro problem, not a micro one.
I don't know that I see it as against his self-interest, because I think...
Well, I guess I should say his self-interest as an offensive guy.
I think it's actually...
Offensive guys typically say, I want to fix the thing I know best.
But that's dumb. I think Kyle Shanahan did a smart thing, and as opposed to thinking about it as not doing what's in his self-interest to add to his unit... I think of it as a show of great confidence in himself. He believes I can make ordinary guys into a good offense, but I want to have extraordinary guys to make damn sure that my defense pulls their weight. And the fact that this defense is suddenly appearing to be maybe one of the top two or three in the league, that's probably more than he expected, but that's just a manifestation of the fact that when they went to add players, they added the right ones and they did a good job of it.
But it is unusual for a guy whose expertise is on one side of the ball to put off what you have to do on the side of the ball you're best at and go the other way. It's not a question of smart as much as it is you're fighting your own instincts.
Right. If I take care of my own strengths, the weaknesses will take care of themselves. And there's a lot of coaches who fall into that pattern. There's no doubt about it. I used to say, and this is something that Albie and I were talking about this morning, before Kyle Shanahan was winning games, before Kyle Shanahan was the kind of guy you just wanted to sit around and talk about how good he was at anything, what I did like about him, when you were looking for what you liked about him, because he didn't like the record, when you were looking for what you liked about Kyle Shanahan, I liked the way he had a steady Eddie approach to every media moment. No matter how his team played, he was on the same even keel. I also appreciate when somebody offers me up a really good criticism to a point I'm trying to make on the radio show. And one of the best criticisms was, hey, Damon, how would you know how Kyle Shanahan reacts either way? He hasn't had a good team. Maybe he would turn into this cocky, hard to deal with. All right, well, so we're kind of running that experiment now. You know, I've always wanted to know, can we run the experiment? What would happen if Cal went to the Rose Bowl? We've never been able to run that experiment.
We can't run that.
We are now kind of running the experiment of how is Kyle Shanahan going to sound if he all of a sudden has a good team and he's feeling himself? Well...
the same way you handle 0-5, you don't pay attention and you just go to work. So I think we got the right guys. I know today was a lopsided game, but you know the league's too hard to just be overconfident. Every week's a tough week, and we got a lot of work to do. Still got some guys who are waiting to get back from injury, and that game by no means was perfect. I thought our defense played four great quarters from the first play to the last play. I think our special teams obviously struggled, and I was real disappointed how the offense finished in the fourth quarter.
Still serving and eating humble pie.
Show me the brash, boisterous NFL head coach who had long-term success. Because you can, there's a couple who did a little.
Yeah.
You know, Ditka, Buddy Ryan had some short-term success, both with starting with the Bears. But there's guys who, you know, Herm Edwards had a little run. Rex Ryan had a very, very little run.
Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson actually is probably the best example of a volatile guy doing really well over the long term.
Who replaced Jimmy Johnson from Oklahoma? Who's my
Switzer?
Guy? Switzer. Barry Switzer was a little crazy bonkers kind of fire brimstone guy.
He inherited a great team.
He sure did.
And once that great team started to deteriorate, he
it was over
fix
for
it.
Him.
But it's not about being brash. It's about being hyper protective and basically walling people off. Once you don't think you need them anymore, that's the experiment that's being run.
Sean Salisbury's joining us in just a little bit. Time now, though, for our 8K per day cash contest. Your chance to win $1,000 by texting the code word PREVIEW, PREVIEW. Do that to 72881. Message and data rates apply. Good luck to all of you. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Sean Salisbury coming by in just a little bit. We're looking forward to that conversation. Always love checking in with him. Good guy, man. I used to work at ESPN. Sean Salisbury was there, too, back in the day. And I've told this story before. Stop me if you've heard it.
Can I stop you even if we haven't?
Yeah.
Okay, don't tell the story.
It's just so funny, though, how a guy who, you know, he was journeyman quarterback. I don't know. He was better than a journeyman quarterback. Sean Salisbury was the Minnesota Vikings quarterback for a long time.
He was an Uber journeyman.
Yeah, he was good. He was good enough to cash an awful lot of NFL game checks is who he was. He started an awful lot of NFL games, but he was never regarded as one of the best, one of the this. And at ESPN, he was always kind of just another guy, never really given that prime spot that he deserved, even though he was doing the Dan Patrick show at the time. And there would be times where we'd go out in the parking lot, man, and he would just throw the football, and goofy-ass Sean Salisbury would plant that back foot and become an NFL quarterback right in front of your eyes and deliver the most perfect spiral you've ever been thrown in a parking lot, whether it be an ESPN parking lot, a Walmart, or your driveway. Like, it was unbelievable. This goofy-natured, doughy, pudgy guy who didn't take himself too seriously would remind you quickly about the difference between guys who talk about it and guys who actually did it.
Do you remember a basketball player by the name of Greg Minor?
Greg Minor played
a few years for the Boston Celtics, was a really good Louisville
not
player.
Not Baby Jordan, not Harold Minor.
No.
Greg Minor? No, that
Greg
I don't.
Minor. Ray, you remember
Greg
remember. Minor? He was a good college player, short NBA career, because he had awful hip injuries, like a career-ending hip injury at, you know, age 25 or something like that. 28, I guess. He was an assistant coach with the D-League team. At that point, it was the D-League that I worked for. And we'd play pickup sometimes. And usually it was, you know, when I was playing, it's like the trainers and the support staff.
Right.
Every now and then,
he'd hop in the game.
Greg Minor would hop in the game. Now, understand, Greg Minor is 6'6", so he's big. But he was a guard, you know, maybe a small forward at the college and NBA level. And he couldn't walk right. Like, his hip is screwed up, man.
Right. Walks like Phil Jackson.
Yes. And, you know, at that time was like 40. A 40-year-old man walking like Phil Jackson.
Ball on you.
Just. Right. He would take you in the post and put you in the torture chamber. He could knock down three-pointers without barely jumping because he barely could. And every now and then, he'd go for like, all right, I'm going to show you that even at 40 with one hip, I can still explode a little bit. And it was just like, holy moly. And that guy barely had an NBA career.
Yeah. Cups of coffee.
That's why anytime somebody says, that guy's not that good.
Right. No, that's right.
I always say, you'd better qualify that because he's not that good compared to the really, really elite guy he's standing next to.
Right.
And the truest thing I ever heard was when I started covering baseball in 1987, Mike Kruko gave me a word of advice that has stuck with me to this day. He said, if you want to say a guy had a bad game, go at it. If you want to say he's a bad player, you're a dumbass.
Fair enough. What's really funny is that some people here prove what dumbasses they are on the text line saying, it's funny, 2 years ago, you guys were talking so much smack about the 49ers. What up, bandwagon? Well, 2 years ago, we were insisting it was 2017 because it was. And they were a bad team. And then things done change. And the day you call Monday after one night is something that you call Tuesday. I mean, things change.
2 years ago, the 49ers needed 16 games to win half as many games as they've won in four this year.
Ding, 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 ding.
And
ding.
I might add, Kolsky and I weren't here.
Oh, the good old days. No, no, man, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. I get
no,
that.
No, no, no.
Sean Salisbury. Old bastard.
Sean Salisbury, host of the Sean Salisbury Show, Sports Talk Radio 970 down in Houston. We're really happy to have him back on here, appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. It is amazing, Sean. Do you get this with your fans, too, who want you to stick with the talking point you had that was correct about a team 3 years ago, but today wouldn't be correct about a team?
Listen, when they get into that talk, I just smirk and laugh and let them go and let them have their moment because, yeah, that's like saying, well, you know, and Ray, I heard you say, talking about, yeah, when we say a guy sucked, he's one of the elite, or the best of the best. If you're a hitter, you may not have the eye Barry Bonds has. You may suck with that. You may take 100 walks, not 200 plus in a season. Yeah, you get the fans, oh, you criticize them. Well, yeah, you know why? Because if they sucked in 2017, I don't have to sit there and stroke it and say, you know what, great team, because then I lose credibility as a damn broadcaster because I'm not a homer. Listen, love when they win, be that when they win, but you know why you guys get paid to do your job and do it well, and I like to think I do too, is when the Houston Astros, for instance, last night, and Greinke gives up four home runs, if we don't criticize him, why the hell would I listen to a guy that just wants to blow smoke up somebody's rear end on a daily basis?
Thank you very much, Sean.
Criticize. That's what we get paid to do. So if I threw five picks in a game, well, maybe not five. I did throw four, though, and I got criticized, I sucked that day. It's okay. It's not personal. We're not talking about him and his wife, and it's not jumping on or off any bandwagon. It's called my job, and I'm not going to over-criticize just to be an ass clown, and I'm not going to under-criticize so everybody says, ooh, see, he loves it. I'm not afraid of their criticism, and neither are you guys. So 2017 and 2019 are different. Do I need to get on all the fans in your city that tweeted me or that called into me or wanted to talk to me about, yeah, Garoppolo sucks. He's overpaid, man. Did you see him in the preseason? He sucked. He had two bad preseason games. He's no good. Yeah, come see me now, okay? So, yeah, you get it all the time.
12-2 is a starter.
Fired up. Look what you've done to me.
I like it, Sean. This is good. We love a frisky Sean Salisbury.
It's only going to get worse. The longer you're on today, the more you're going to regret being on today.
Let me just ask you.
I love you guys, man. I'm in.
Sean, what do you think of the 4-0 Niners? I think they got a couple things that just mean you got to take them seriously. A defense that can get to your quarterback with four guys and a running game means that's a football team.
Amen. And you know what I love? First of all, the coaching game plan and the way they went about their business and the execution the entire game. They wiped the floor with the Cleveland Browns last night. It was embarrassing. And I go on in Cleveland, guys, every Wednesday, and I'll be on tomorrow. And I pick them to win the division, and they're going to take a tongue lashing tomorrow, and they should. But I'll tell you, you guys are getting paid too. Line up. I love the old school Kyle with mixed with new school. I'll run a back in the backfield. He'll step up on motion ISO, boom, kick out and give the running back a chance to make a big play to set the tone early in the game. But then we'll spread it out and go four, and then we'll go three with a tight end. This guy understands football. They out-coached him and out-executed him. Yeah, and you're right. When you have a defense, remember the guys they started drafting, these young defensive front seven guys. And think about the Giants, how they beat Brady in two Super Bowls, and in one in particular, the first one. I'm not comparing them to that, but I'm just saying they're building it. They pressure with four, and man, as a defensive coordinator, what I can do to deploy my other seven, it's nice. But when you got to say, well, we got to pressure with six, and a quarterback goes in. See, I always tell quarterbacks, you understand the conflict, you'll find the answers. You can't find the conflict as much when you got seven dudes in the secondary, and they're getting to you with four, and five can't block them. And then when they then, but you know the conflict when, hey, man, they can't get to you at four, so they're going to have to bring five or six. Well, good. They're going to play a lot of man. I'll run a lot of man beaters. We'll beat them. They did everything right. Cleveland did nothing right. They pressured Mayfield. They got after him. They hit you with four, and they run the football. And I love a team in this new age football that doesn't have to throw for 370 to win. Yeah, Jimmy could throw for a buck 88, complete 70%, beat you. The next week he may throw for 320 and two touchdowns and beat you. You're now playing the San Francisco 49ers. You better take notice because they don't just have to beat you one way like some teams. If in Atlanta, and they're not any good, I'm using them as an example, if Matt Ryan doesn't throw for 470 and keep him in a game, they're not winning. They're just not going to win. So we know that around the league. But you guys right now, if Jimmy has a, you know, he didn't have an explosive night, solid night, still win a football game. You're damn right we better take notice. And they were kind of an in vogue NFC team going into the season. And instead of reading press clippings like some teams have done, they've decided to stay at it, go to work, stay on the grind when everybody else is questioning them. And now they're in a position, you take care of must wins in September and October, you get a little leeway in December. I love it. Love the way they're playing.
With the way that the 49ers are not the only team that is doing this, which is basically run first, then make you deal with that before they do everything else. There are other teams doing that now. Have offensive coordinators made the adjustment away from what I call the defensive adjustment of basically worrying about a team that throws the ball 50 times a game?
Yeah, and here's what I also think. But here's what I like about Kyle, and we watched New England do this, and I think that, you know, a guy like Kyle will go and say, I'm going to watch what New England does every week. Why wouldn't you watch Brady every week? Why wouldn't you watch the best if you want to learn what Khalil Mack does? If I'm a defensive end, why wouldn't I watch him? So I'm with you, but here's what. It's not just that they're going to run it first. Game plan, if it says run it first, well, then we're going to run it first. There's going to come a time here, whether it's the Seattle game or another game, where Jimmy's going to have to throw 10 straight times or 8 straight times, maybe to start off, soften them up, and then you come back and pound them. And that's just it. It's not a dimension where it says, man, if we don't run it early, we ain't winning. But if last night calls for, let's pound them early, and then we'll just mix in some short passing, mix in when they give us the deep play and knock them out, that's fine. But, yeah, I love the fact that Kyle's not going into the game. Guys, we can do the math. Analytics are pretty easy. It's evidence. Throw the ball 45, 50 times a game, you're not winning much. There's only a few guys that can win. Brady's one that's thrown it a handful of times over 50 or something in one game. You're not going to do it. Even the Mahomeses of the world, if they had to do that on a consistent basis, they're not. Guys want to throw it about 30, 28 to 32 times. You want to run it about 35 times, 65, 70 plays. You're going to win a lot of games that way, and the statistic isn't yards. You go back, and it's been this way forever. It's attempts, rushing attempts. You get 35, 40 rushing attempts. Look at the stats over the last two decades. I'll guarantee you the winning percentage is going to be through the roof. So, yeah, but I don't think Kyle's looking around saying, we got to be like Kansas City. I'll take some of the stuff they do, but next week or the week after, they may have to throw 36 times but still mix it in. But their balance is so good. And, guys, teams that have to live by the pass eventually will die by it. Even the great New England Patriots, when it gets right down to it, they play defense, they pressure you, they run the football when necessary, and they kill you with that slow death, the short passing, get it out of your hand, make it to my math. Now, I'm not real smart, but 4 + 4 + 4 is 12 yards. That's a first down. That's how you move chains, and that's how they live.
And like we're saying, run game's so critical, but part of why they're so successful in the run game is they're incredibly multiple out of the same formations. We hear about that all the time. Kyle Juszczyk is a guy who allows them to do that to maybe a higher degree than almost any team in the league. How much will that absence hurt if he's gone 4 to 6 weeks?
It will hurt because we don't keep a bunch of those dudes on the roster, guys. You know that. One. And to find somebody to come in and give you the same, because that is a hell of a tough, good, smart football player that does allow you to deploy. Guys, you know this. Back when Montana and Young were playing, when Aikman was in Dallas with North Turner, and when I had Norv at USC, see, what the key is to make defenses think you're running 85,000 different plays. But what you're really doing, you're dressing them up, you're changing, I'm giving you a bunch of different personnel groupings and a bunch of different formations and motions and shifts, and in tune, I'm running about 15 passes and about 5 or 6 runs. I'm just making it look a little different to you. So on defense, we're complex. Boy, look at all the stuff they do. But in really, Jerry Rice is running the slant, John Taylor the flat, and then the next time Jerry's running the flat and John Taylor's running the slant, then the next time we're going to boot it and Tom Rathman's going to get to the flat and Jerry's going to run the curl. So they're doing that now. Kyle's taking some of that stuff and put – so, yes, you become less multiple when you don't have that stud, that dude in the backfield. And think about it now. You have to go find somebody or move a tight end there and try to do it. So now Kyle's genius comes into play. How do we get somebody who can at least give us the threat of that, depending on how long he's out, and at least allow us to line up like that? And if not, then you're going to have to skin the cat another way and get by with it. But I can't begin to tell you how valuable guys move fullbacks, a little bit of H movement, how valuable they are, and especially in what Kyle does. But he's a bright guy, man. He'll find a way, and hopefully it won't be long. But I can tell you this, we are starting to see, and we will see more of it. The fullback kind of went away, but you need, you know, the guy who can mash, who can lead up on a linebacker, but can also slip out to the flat and you get him a six-yard completion. Those guys may be as valuable as anybody now when you have them on your team because of the multiple formations. We don't see a whole lot of two backs in the backfield anymore, and the teams that are doing it have people tripping like, where did this come from? Well, it's been in football forever. We just went away from it. Kyle said, no, here we're going to do it.
Sean Salisbury here on 95.7 The Game. Fired up, love talking football with him. So how long did it take for you? How many games in a row would you need to see a rookie prove himself before you thought, all right, he's got the goods? And do you think every Niner is now about as bought in on Nick Bosa as you can be? I mean, he is the best rookie wearing this team's uniform since the glory day of Alden Smith.
Yeah, he is. Well, he got pretty good DNA, guys. You know, and remember coming out, there were people as good as Joey is. There's a lot of people thought this he was better, and we heard him talk about it from Ohio State, and then from Ohio State to this one. So you heard people discuss it. For me, at any position, you know, quarterback may take a little bit longer, but I think we get a pretty good idea. I've always said, team wise, give me 4 to 6 games. About 6 games in, I can start to understand what their identity is. Now, we got a long career ahead of us for him, but the motor, the intelligence, he runs, he's physical, he's long, he's nasty, he doesn't have a problem talking to you about it and then going out there and showing you he can do it. He's got, and like I said, I don't discount, honest to God, I don't discount DNA. There are certain guys that just get football. I'm not talking about athletes, or just that. I'm talking about guys that get football. Bosa gets it. This was a great pick. It's going to be a great pick. And he's on a team that he's going to grow with. You guys got yourself, as long as he's healthy and stays healthy, you got a guy that you're going to be, he's going to be a continuous Pro Bowl guy and give you a chance. And again, as long as the guys around him continue to play their game and elevate, what you get is who you're going to double as the season goes on. And as the next year rolls around, that becomes the problem, because your second guy will get 15 sacks. And it's like a second receiver. If they're taking away DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller has to have a game with 14 catches. You're getting a single. You should be spectacular. Second receivers should be doing a lot of damage. Other guys on San Francisco, a lot of damage. Bosa's going to create that when we start to talk. We're going to talk about him, his brother, Ingram, Mack, those great pass rushers. He's got, and he's not one-dimensional. He'll play the run, too, but I love his motor.
What have we learned of lasting value about the Oakland Raiders in the last 2 weeks that we didn't know before then?
It's one thing to teach it, talk it, is buying in. And you hear coaches talk about it all the time, guys, but it's underrated. Is we all this, and you're talking to a guy who, like I've said before on here, guys, I'm a lifelong Raider fan. So I try to watch every move they make. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but to get rid of trouble, they're better. And Antonio Brown was trouble because everything was him. And they were able to sift through that as players and get through it. We know the quarterback. Hey, when he was an MVP candidate before the broken leg, he needed to get back to that. They're rallying around him. There's a believability there. The coach, they've bought into what he's teaching. You know, there was a lot of people who said, well, John's been in the broadcast booth for a decade. Can he adjust his stubborn ways? Will he be willing to adjust? Or will it be square peg, round hole? It's this way or the highway, we're not doing. It's okay to draw a line in the sand to have some of that, because there's rules, there's leadership. But there's also that, hey, I'm giving you the week off after a big win on a bye week. People love, players love it. So they're buying in, as long as you don't lose the discipline of, we're going to give you the week off, but make sure you're smart that week off. And on the field, guys, they're more physical, I think, than we thought. Jacobs is a stud, and they're making more plays, and defensively they're stepping up. And they went out, and they're matching like the Chicago Bears and saying, no, we're going to bury you. And the first thing I think John wanted to do was be physical. and he needs production from his quarterback because he loves quarterbacks. So you know what it is? They're buying in, and a lot of us, and the question, could John adjust? There's been an adjustment period for players, but there's an adjustment period for John Gruden, his ability to bring what he does and then be able to say, you know what, no, I got to do something a little different. I'm sure it was difficult, a silly thing, to give guys week off. I'm sure in his mind he thinks, do I want to give guys a week away from football? Hard to do. But you know what? They come back refreshed and ready to go. So he's doing the little things that I don't think a lot of us thought the Raiders were going to do after what we've seen. We thought it was chaos. Well, they're getting comfortable being uncomfortable, and they're operating, and they're no bye week, and a lot of people thought they were. So key leaders are playing good football. They're more physical. And once again, you're talking about the run game. The fact that you have to deal with Jacobs in the run game every week and their physicality makes them a bigger threat than we thought. And quite frankly, other than the Chiefs, the Raiders are as good as the Chargers in the division right now. That's proven. Denver is up and down. Hell, the Raiders could be a team if they continue to get better. That's pushing a possible, or at least battling in a non-deep lower half AFC. It's not very good right now, other than the top-heavy teams. Why not the Raiders, man? They're playing great football. I say great. They're playing better football than we expected, but on the verge of doing better and better things, and they're starting to put the pieces together. And John has them buying into what he's teaching.
What if I told you Verlander's leaking oil on short rest? It's 2-0 Tampa over Houston, bottom of the first.
I was just training a quarterback, guys, and I'm sitting here in my truck. I drove home. I was training an eighth grade quarterback, and turned off the radio, and I didn't hear that part. And now are you really trying to piss me off today? Verlander. So
you better.
In truth, Sean, yes, he is.
Yeah, you better get over to that baseball game, Sean. They need you.
Yeah, well, they obviously needed they had to run Verlander out there. But here's the key: if he does leak this oil and blows a gasket, they get to come back home, and that guy who runs it up there about 100, Garrett Cole, who hasn't lost, guys, since our kids or your kids were in class last year. May 22nd was Cole's last loss. So I don't like to hear it, but I do like the drama and anxiety of a game five. Why the hell not? Let's hope they can turn around. Their hitters aren't playing very well. So I'm going to pop upstairs when I'm done with this and see if Verlander can't turn it around.
It's good for business, and Sean, so are you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys. You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me on.
At Sean Unfiltered on Twitter, that guy, ball of energy. And yeah, right now the Tampa Bay Rays are a little bit of a ball of energy, up 2-0 on Houston. Verlander is up there. He's already thrown 24 pitches, and he's only got two outs here in the first, two runs across. Starting guys on short rest, Ray, what were we talking about the other day, right?
It is death.
It really is.
The problem, though, is that now Tampa's got to put their future in the hands of Diego Castillo. I'm telling you, 11-9. I don't know who gets the 11, but this game's 4.5 hours easy.
If it's death, why do guys do it? Why do teams fall into this over and over again? Is it just more comfortable and easier to explain why my superstar lost on short rest than it is the bigger risk going on full rest?
No, because Wade Miley screwed him yesterday. They needed him not to have to come into that game. And when he did, there went your game four starter.
I just think it's Madison Bumgarner screwing up reality for everybody.
Well, it's not a question. I mean, he's like hitting the lottery. You're not hitting the lottery a second time.
Double.
3-0, second and third.
Wow.
Listen.
Kate Upton's not going to come and save you today, Justin.
The answer to your initial question is because people in sports are stupid and do stupid things all the time. That's the answer to your question. It's the same reason we see bad coaching that we can identify. Us, not, I mean, relative experts to a person on the street, but not to coaches, that these guys have lived in these games, and yet we can easily observe boneheaded mistakes that they make on a regular basis, other than the very best ones, basically.
Well, but
they do it because they're dumb.
And no.
All right.
Not in this case, because the Astros had 3.5 starters. And the one thing about the playoffs now is that there is that tendency to get into trouble in the middle of a game and put in your best guy. And typically your best guy can often be the next day's starter. And I think if you want to say that A.J. Hinch made a mistake, it was by pitching Wade Miley in that game instead of saving him for a game four that you knew you might have to have.
Guys, Sean Salisbury was a great guest. Hope you bring him back. Yeah, we absolutely will. We love talking to Sean. That guy brings it.
Even though he hates Damon.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, take a number. This is Nick Lafayette. Nick, you're on 95.7 The Game. What do you got?
Damon, I recall in 2008 when the Rays made their one run in the postseason, you had a special song for them, and I'm curious if you have it tuned up just in case they pull this one out tonight.
Was it the Rays or was it Scott Stapp singing about the Florida Marlins that was the special song?
Oh, no, it was the Rays. It was the dubbed Chicago song.
We will look that up. If we can find it for you, we will play it because I'm sure it's an atrocious disaster. We'll try to find
it. Was basically it was that Cubs song with Rays spliced into it.
Oh, geez. I remember it. The Rays had no distinct, you know, traditions whatsoever, so I let them borrow the Go Cubs Go song for the Go. I don't know if we have that anymore. That might be a several seasons in one station joke ago. I don't think that crossed the street with me, but thank you.
Since the 1995 launch of the wild card era, pitchers starting on three or fewer days rest have gone a combined 30-44 with a 4.58 ERA over 120 games.
It's actually not as bad as I thought it would be.
Except, who are you starting on 3 days rest?
Right.
That's the best pitchers in baseball in a 120-game sample being bad. Don't do it. Unless you have Madison Bumgarner and he's done it before and you know he can do it, don't do it. Especially with a man who's almost 40. Don't do it.
You know who I would have started on 5 days rest? Mike Fiers. Oh.
You weren't saying that before that game. You liked Minaya in that spot.
No, I asked everybody.
You asked
why
me
not
and I was
Fiers?
The only one who said Fiers, and I'm not taking credit for it because I was perfectly willing to be wrong.
I said Minaya emphatically and that did not work out.
Yeah, everyone was wrong about all of it.
Okay, I'm going to ask Matt.
Oh,
something.
No! We suck again!
Or are we going to break?
We are going to go to a break. You're going to observe that break, and you're going to sit on this, and we're going to come back with Ray's incredibly interesting question, which will probably carry the next hour. Well, I'm just kidding. It doesn't have to be that good. It only has to get us to 5 o'clock when Peter King joins us, courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7, The Game.
Second and nine. Four-man rush. Score it! Kittle! And when you got one of the best tight ends in the league, that happens too. 22-yard touchdown catch, George Kittle.
We get into that when we're able to run the ball for 280 yards. You know, like I said, it sets up our pass game. And you know, that last play was a pretty simple play. I just got a through route, which is you read the safeties. If you're split, you go down the middle. And I was pretty awesome on the motion. Both safeties looked the opposite direction of me. And pretty sure I knew it was him. I thought it was a touchdown before they even said hike. And who was it? Staley said that Shanahan, as soon as we said hike, he turned around and just called touchdown. So that was pretty cool. You got to ask about that.
Knowing it's a touchdown before you hike the ball. That
did they
is
ask Shanahan?
That's well schemed. That is good played. I don't have. We got to find out.
Find out if someone asked Shanahan if he actually called touchdown right as the ball was snapped.
Joe Staley wouldn't lie. Why are you trying to make him
no,
look
you're alive? Right.
Anyways, welcome on back. George Kittle is absolutely removing himself from the one of the best tight ends in football conversation to maybe elevate himself to the best tight end in football conversation. We will have much more on this in just a second, trying to figure out who he is in this league. But, Ray, you promised a fascinating question as we were going to break, and I'm going to hold you to it right now. What did you want to know? What can we do for you? Turn your mic on. God bless you. God, love him.
Don't lecture me. I get enough of that at home. Who were you going to start in game four? If not Verlander,
you could have started the rookie, or you could have not used Wade Miley yesterday in a game you ended up losing anyway. Either option is fine with me, but plan ahead because you should know, not yesterday or this morning or last week, but 5 years ago, don't start guys on 3 days rest. Plan otherwise. Don't do the thing that you know rarely works.
Right. I mean,
but it's not that it rarely works.
One quarter of the time.
If we have a data-driven industry, why doesn't data drive this decision?
Because this decision isn't about the wins and losses. It's about the total thing. And he said they have a 4.67 ERA.
5.8, but yes.
Well, you said 4.
4.58.
Okay, 4.58, which is not a ridiculous number when you consider what pitchers are putting up, not only in this playoff, but in previous playoffs. It's a calculated gamble. And if they had somebody, I mean, I can buy your point about don't pitch Miley, but then you're basically giving up game three when you don't really need to.
888-957-9570.
Do you want to fall behind 2-1? Because if you put Jose Urquidy in that spot instead of Miley, you increase your chances of getting your brains beat in at game three. Now you're in trouble.
You want to increase your chances of getting your brains beaten in? Show up to the playoffs wearing a Minnesota Twins uniform.
Oh,
God. I mean, it's
just whoever plays the Yankees, though.
The Yankees,
I would like to see what their first-round record is. And not just the record, but like the total score. It feels like every time the Yankees are in the first-round series, they're just bombing all over somebody.
Well, the problem with the Twins argument, though, is that it's not just the last 14 or 15 games. They're three of their last 23. Three of their last 26.
Oh, that is bad.
It means that basically they're coming in either with really good pitching and not much hitting, or really good hitting and not much pitching, which is what happened this time.
Basically, the biggest question is, where's Kirby Puckett?
Could we just jump back to the Miley thing quickly
He's
again?
He's sort of dead.
Because here's my point. When you brought Wade Miley in, you were down 6-1.
They were trying to
let it go, man. Let it go.
That's an incredibly hard thing to do when you have the best offensive baseball at a time when the ball basically, it's a bocce ball.
But you've taken now Wade Miley out of his comfort zone, which I think showed when he didn't perform particularly well, and Justin Verlander out of his comfort zone as well. Instead, keep them both comfortable and admit that when Zach Greinke gets torn apart for 3 2/3 innings, it's not your day.
It's hard to admit that in a 5-game series.
All right.
It's why, and the proof of that, it's how many times guys have been asked to pitch on 3 days rest, because it's considered you've got to go with your best guy and just grind through it.
Right.
Greinke really is the guy who's the guilty party here.
Of course.
Because he lasted, what, 3 2/3?
3 2/3. He got them off schedule. No argument there. But again, it's pure insanity to me to say, yeah, we know this thing doesn't really work, but we're doing it again because it's like a difficult, it's hard for me to brace for the other option. Just do it because you know this one doesn't work.
Well, you don't know that it doesn't work because it's worked at least 30 times and probably more than that when you factor in no decisions.
Fair enough.
888-957.
You're basically playing a 40% chance instead of maybe a 45% chance. By putting in Urquidy. I mean, you're not really gaining much.
I think it's more than that.
Way.
But even if it's gaining 5%, why would you consistently make the choice that loses you a 5% chance of winning? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, so are you done?
I think so.
No, I don't. I'm good. We got 5 more minutes before we go to another break.
No, it's not a break then.
It's not that's how just, the clock works at
that's
all.
That's when Peter King joins
not even
us.
Close.
Oh, well, he's watching the game. He doesn't care.
God.
He's with Mattress Mac. He's bet the Astros. He's done for the night.
Can we get to Richard Sherman,
please?
Do you think Baker Mayfield shook his hand? Yes or no? No, I'm just kidding. No, look, Richard Sherman loves to make a mountain out of a molehill. He will imagine there was a molehill just to create a mountain, and it's who he is. It's who he's been his entire career. He needs an enemy to train against. He needs a guy who is the dissenting voice in the room that he needs to prove wrong. Some guys are motivated this way. Like, I don't think George Kittle's motivated this way at all. George Kittle's like, happy-go-lucky, pound a beer, show up, play well. I'm just here to be friends and kick ass.
You know what, though? There's got to be something in it. May not be an animosity with Kittle. It might just be a loving the game so much. It seems a more positive energy.
Yes. Richard Sherman channels power from the dark side.
Yes, he channels negative energy.
Yes, he really, really does. Again, listen to him last night talking about how anyone who predicted bad for the Niners, don't go changing your tune now.
You don't worry about it. You want idiots to sound like idiots, but you want them to hold their position the whole year. Like, don't flip flop with us. Like if you said going to make it. You said we were some way early on. Just stick with that position. Hold it. Don't try to give us credit now. Try to give us credit now. Just stick. If you had us ranked 25, keep us ranked 25. If you had us going home early, if you had us going 3-3 and whatever, have us going 3-whatever. You know what I mean? At least stick by your word, because I want you to sound like an idiot at the end.
I mean, again, he was feeling himself last night. He was even upset at balls being tipped at the line of scrimmage.
Hey, whoever batted that, that was a pick six y'all batted down. Hey, no. Hey, I was sitting there like, ah! I don't drop those. I made a career not dropping those.
Made a career not dropping those.
No lies.
He's smarter than that, though. I mean,
yeah.
The fact is, guys don't sit there and go, I'm tipping this ball because...
That's a joke.
No, but against Baker Mayfield, 40% of the time the ball's going to get tipped at the line of scrimmage. That's one time when you go, well, I would have had the pick six, but I get how this works against this guy.
What if I gave you a 45% chance of that being tipped at the line of scrimmage? Would you start Baker on short rest?
I probably would have had Jose Urquidy as the Browns quarterback.
Richard Sherman.
Pressure from Boza, and it is intercepted by Richard Sherman. Boza had the pressure, Sherman with the pick.
Sherman can talk about the motivation of a handshake snub, real or perceived or otherwise. I have seen footage of Baker Mayfield shaking Richard Sherman's hand. So I really don't know what moment he's talking about there. Mike Silver went very public with this story. Richard Sherman told this story to Mike Silver. Richard Sherman's actually catching a lot of crap about this, saying you're trying to embarrass a young guy. Like, if you're saying that he's being wrong to the brotherhood, you're being wrong to the brotherhood by lying about what he didn't do. And we got either way, it is one of the dumbest topics going right now. And if Richard Sherman needs to pretend that Aaron Donald broke into his house and stole his favorite pair of socks for the next game, I want him to do that. Like, whatever it takes. If you need to pretend that Jared Goff comes home and cooks a meal for your wife every week that you would have rather cooked for her, do that. Whatever you need to do to be angry next week, because some guys play good calm, some guys play good angry. Richard Sherman is probably one of the best playing angry players out there between In the Bay Area Playing Angry Hall of Fame. I don't know who I'm putting in first, Richard Sherman or Draymond Green.
I'm putting in Richard Sherman, and here's why. And I don't like anybody more than I like Draymond Green, but...
That's not true.
Okay, maybe Clay.
Not maybe Clay.
You're right. Well, there's a difference between respecting someone for the deity that they are and loving them as a basketball player, but 6 1/2 dozen of the other.
I'm worried about China Clay. Just dawned on me. Are we going to get China Clay anymore?
I think it's okay. I think you're actually going to get more China Clay to try to make up for the other China problems. I think Clay is on the short list of least likely to offend the Chinese.
He's the Dennis Rodman that opens up China.
Oh, God.
Good Lord. Continue. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
It's okay. Here's the thing about Sherman. Well, two things. First of all, when he's doing the stuff to get angry, Cooper Kupp is the guy I want him angry at. Cooper Kupp. The golf, whatever. Aaron Donald, he doesn't play against. Get angry at Cooper Kupp. We'll tell you, he went to your house and cooked for your wife. I like that one.
One Cooper,
other thing, though.
One Cooper, two cups.
Oh, boy. The other part is Richard Sherman goes into that Hall of Fame first for me because, as angry as he plays, as much as he goes out of his way to rile himself up, I'm never worried he's going to lose control. Never. And as much as I love Draymond, I'm always a little worried he's going to lose control and cost himself or the team.
My problem with it, and it's not a problem because this is one of those things that I simply don't care about, there are plenty of things that rile him up under normal circumstances, that making up something, it's beneath him. I mean, if you don't like Baker Mayfield, you don't even have to make up the handshake.
He didn't make it up. You may think it's a dumb custom. There's usually a post coin flip handshake that Baker avoided.
Right, but
it's a real thing. It may be a dumb thing to get upset about. Richard Sherman today has said he really wasn't that upset about it. Whatever. He didn't make it up.
He just said he made it up because he said he wasn't that upset about it, but yet he pointedly made it a thing last night. When, in fact, if you don't like Baker Mayfield, come up with a real reason, which is he acts like he's been there even though he hasn't.
Right. Text line.
That's a legitimate argument, and I want Richard Sherman to be a teller of truths in all situations.
He's like, look, you're an idiot, Damon. He didn't shake his hand a second time. Well, no one ever said you had to shake hands twice. I mean, that was you do shake a man's hand. No one ever said there's two handshakes to this custom. There's two handshakes to this moment. It might be something that is normal, but I've also seen guys and jog back to their sideline right after that coin flip is finished. Again, whether these are real, actual slights, created, premeditated, totally imagined, doesn't matter. 4-0. That's what officially matters. And what officially matters is it's our 5 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.